Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
It's 5 o'clock on Friday, and you know what that means. It's time for Sports Time Radio. I'm the Big Jack, and of course, since it is Friday, and you're going to get used to hearing this music.
Start spreading the news.
Oh, of course, that means Schomburg Stu is here.
In the house.
I need an applause button or something when you know that happens. But, all right, if you'd like to call into the podcast, talk to Stu or I, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, the blogs go up on Wednesdays and Saturdays, so look for something popping up there tomorrow morning. Of course, while you're over there at sportstimeradio.com, hit that link, follow it over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. If you could like that while you're over there, well, hey, we greatly appreciate that. But don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. Now, sadly, we're still trying to get Stu on Twitter, but I am out there at Burke Time. And as always, if you have any questions for Stu, feel free to ship them over to me, and I will gladly ask him for you. I don't know if I'll give you his response, but I'll at least ask him the question. So there you go. All right, now I have to get your opinion on this, Stu. The suspensions came down from the White Sox-Royals brawl, and I guess more or less the way you look at it, officially they got the same thing. Tim Anderson got a game for what they described as a racial epithet that he used, while Brad Keller got 5 games, of course, as a starting pitcher, that means 1 game, for throwing at Anderson. Somehow this doesn't seem fair. Are you buying this, or is there a way? What's the way baseball works this out?
This is the amount of suspension seems kind of typical. Whenever there's a skirmish of this kind, there really wasn't much of a skirmish when you think about it. But I'm curious to what kind of racial epithet that Anderson used.
So, well, apparently from the reports that I have heard, he called Keller a weak ass and then dropped the N-bomb.
Wow.
So, but yeah, and you know, obviously, you know, it was kind of interesting, you know, being that Anderson is African-American and Keller is white, that it went that way. But I can understand he was upset. You know, nobody likes to get hit. Fortunately, he just got hit in the rear end. I saw a guy who mentioned a possible solution for this, and I don't remember his name. I saw him on the show I hate when Brian Kenny's on MLB Network, so I didn't watch it long. But he suggested that we could get this all to go away if they start suspending pitchers for 10, 20, and 30 games, depending on, like, the severity of where they go after a guy. And, like, in this case, Keller would get 10 games because he just hit him in the rear end. Where, you know, obviously if you were a little higher, the suspension would go with it. You know, that would start to make guys, like, if he had a 10-game suspension, he'd miss 2 starts. You know, then obviously 20 would be 4 and 30 would be 6 and, you know, anything like that. You know, if you've got a pitcher missing 6 starts, I think he's gonna kind of think about throwing at anybody, isn't he?
Yeah, that would make a difference. But of course, there are many situations that we know of in which it's unintentional and the batter actually gets hit. Now, how could you determine if it's purposeful or not?
Yeah, well, you know, I think in what he was attempting to explain was the situation like this, where it was clear Keller was going after Anderson. You know, I mean, this was completely clear of how, you know, things were going to go. He was going to hit him, just
right.
Bottom line.
And in his defense, I must say that where he hit him was pretty minor. At least he didn't go head hunting, and really, that could have escalated into a very, very bad situation if that occurred. But it didn't warrant head-eye pitch, which is, of course, extremely dangerous. And this time he got hit in the rear end, no big deal. And I guess they did what they had to do. And I think that the other potential of making it a little bit more severe is not going to work out. That I don't think they would ever consider doing it that severely.
Well, you know, the I guess, I don't even know if you want to describe it as humorous or how you want to look at it, but it looked like Anderson was handling things okay, and everything really escalated when the manager started getting after each other. And it was just kind of like, then it all seemed to kind of get out of control with these guys. So it was just kind of like, you guys would just shut up.
It looked like nothing was going to happen. There's a couple of words said very mildly, I thought. And then, as you pointed out, when the manager started coming out and the bench started to clear.
So, yeah, it was just kind of like, wait, it was more on those guys really than anybody else. It was kind of like, wait, you guys kind of made this much worse than it was supposed to be. So
for some reason, there seems to be a history between Kansas City and the White Sox for these types of situations to happen. It's not the first time it's happened, certainly, and it seems to have been quite common over the last 5-10 years. I don't know what the problem is.
Yeah, it just, you know, well, and obviously, you know, we know what the problem is with this one. Tim Anderson hit a home run. You know, that was kind of clear what went on there. But, yeah, it's just, it's always strange when it's like the same two teams that are like, oh, okay, so we've got another problem here.
Yeah, and there are other, there's a couple of other teams in the American League that seem to have a history of doing this for when they compete as well.
Yeah, and you know it will be interesting, you know, to see if, you know, anything becomes of this when the teams finally run into each other again. I mean, they do play, you know, what is it, 19 times over the
19
year?
19 times, yeah.
So, they will have.
When do they meet next?
Yeah, that I don't know, but you got to figure it can't be, you know, can't be too much time in between games.
No. So when you're in the same division, you're gonna. Yeah. You're going to meet them sooner than later. Then it should be interesting to see what happens then.
You know, yeah, depending on, you know, of course, you know, you never know with Major League Baseball with the way they schedule things. It could be possible that they, you know, they don't see each other for months. Let me see if my internet wants to work quickly enough, and maybe I can find out when the next time where the White Sox are going to actually see the Royals here. So, come on. So close. But, yeah, I don't know. I think, you know, I think baseball has to figure out some kind of solution along the lines. Oh, it does look like there's a little break. They have a three-game series in Kansas City June 7th, 8th, and 9th. So it is a little bit of time for the play, doesn't it? Yeah.
Close to almost 2 months, 6 weeks at least, before they meet again. And I don't think Mr. Anderson will be quite as hot at the plate when they meet the next time, though.
No.
Yeah, no, probably not. Humorously, it's one of those situations for the White Sox. It's the end of a five-game road trip. They play two in Washington, they go to Kansas City, and then they come home and they play Washington for two more. So, I guess that's just their interleague thing, but it's like that's an odd schedule.
Scheduling, yeah. Yeah, it's more difficult, I think, now with the interleague play to make these schedules every year. It can't be easy.
Well, it is for them. They just pump it into the computer and it spits it out. So.
Yeah. Well, you want to have it set up so if you're gonna play an East Coast team, at least make it so that it's working out with the other rest of your schedule.
Yeah, you know, the tough part is always when they have, you know, that you play that two-game series in, you know, California, and then all of a sudden they've got you flying all the way across the country for a series. It's like, wait, really? You couldn't, you know, make an adjustment here for this? So.
Yeah. They always try to schedule at least, when they go on the West Coast, at least two or three West Coast teams are going to play. For example, the Cubs are going to wind up playing San Diego and Los Angeles and maybe go across state to San Francisco also.
Yeah, you know, well, you know, it only makes sense. You know, I mean, if you're going to send the team out there, you might as well get the games in while they're there. Why, you know, make them wait? But, you know, who knows? But all right, well, you know, I'm starting to wonder here, Stu. You know, the Mets got off to, you know, pretty good start. They're 10-8. I thought they had an opportunity to be, you know, a really big surprise out there in the NL East, because they, you know, they added some real quality veterans and they have that starting pitching, of course. But you know, Jacob DeGrom came out of the gate looking like he'd defend his Cy Young, you know, award. He went 2-0, had a 14 strikeout game. Well, his last two starts, he's pitched 9 innings, given up 9 runs, and lost both those games. And apparently he is headed for an MRI on his right elbow. Again, obviously, one of the best pitchers in baseball.
Yeah,
the Mets are they're like sunk without him, aren't they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, we talked about this before, but I don't know what the reason is, but the Mets seem to be the most injury-prone team in the majors, especially when it comes to their pitching.
You know, it might have something to do with New York. You know, because it's rubbed off on the Yankees this year. So.
Yeah, also the Yankees, too. That's right.
DeGrom was really the only thing holding the Mets rotation together. I'm looking at it here. Syndergaard's ERA is 5.63 in his 4 starts. Zach Wheeler's is 6.35 in his 4 starts. Steven Matz is a little better at 4.96 in his 4 starts. And then Jason Vargas, who's made 3 starts, has a 14.21 ERA.
Well, this MRI turns out to be a bad injury. I think we can discount the Mets for the rest of the season as a legitimate contender for the NL East.
Yeah, you know, and this is kind of, you know, the path they went down last year. I think they started off 11-0 last year, and then with the exception of DeGrom, I think every pitcher got hurt. So I guess it's his year to make up. Now, obviously, you know, Syndergaard, Wheeler, and Mott are still quality starting pitchers. Vargas is 36. You got to wonder if maybe he's just done as a starter. So, you know, maybe they can hang around. But depending on what this is, I mean, if he's headed for Tommy John or he's got something else and he's done for the year, you know, you just can't cover for that, right?
No. Not with the rest of their staff being questionable. Although they have a couple of other good arms, and you know that those high ERAs are going to come down throughout the rest of the season. But that's a major loss if that injury turns out to be serious.
So, yeah, and then I don't know if you caught this little Met tidbit the other day, but Justin Wilson came in, worked a perfect ninth inning, and picked up his first save for the Mets. He is 1-1 with a 3.24 ERA in his eight appearances for them. So I don't think he had a save the entire time he was with the Cubs.
No, it's a strange thing. There are a handful of pitchers who have pitched very well for other major league teams, but for some inexplicable reason, when they get over to the Cubs, they just don't do the job. What could be causing that?
Yeah, you know, you wonder, and you know, there are guys who, you know, go through these things. You know, they have, you know, a fantastic career someplace, and then they get a big, you know, free agent deal, or they just get dealt someplace else, and it's just, you know, never the same. And you wonder if it's, you know, I know a lot of guys have difficulty going to the bigger cities. You know, like a Chicago or a New York or, you know, even an L.A. or, you know, Boston, you get under the, you know, the really big cities with the bright lights, and some guys can't handle that. They need to play in the, you know, the smaller markets. But yeah, you know, you just want comfortability has to do with it.
You think that it's the pressure for competing in a large market, or is there too much nightlife in the major markets?
Yeah, well, you know, it could be a little of both. You know, I mean, we know when when Mark Grace was a Cub, he enjoyed very much going out on the town after games. You know, I'm sure there's been a few other guys who, would like to get out. I mean, you know, obviously just, you know, the most famous one, though not a player, of course, was Harry Carey, who was the mayor of Rush Street here in Chicago. You've got to figure, you know, there's a lot to do in those markets. So maybe, you know, guys that are out there doing it.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. And, of course, when the Cubs didn't have night games, you imagine how popular that the Rush Street was to those guys.
Oh, yeah.
After the afternoon game was over with.
So, yeah, you've got to figure, yeah, if you're going to go out, I mean, hey, what the heck, right? So
that's it. That's why Joe Pepitone was so happy to be traded to the Cubs many, many years ago.
I just remember when the Cubs wanted to interview Whitey Herzog for an open managerial position, he said he couldn't do it because with all day games, he'd start drinking. So
it's a good line. And unfortunately, I'm sure there was a lot of truth to what he said, too.
So, yeah, and then my question's still about, you know, I know the Brewers are off to a really good start. You know, they're 12-8, but I'm still really up and down on their, you know, their rotation. You know, they just, I believe they put Freddie Peralta on the injured list, and today they optioned Corbin Burnes, who had made, I think, was it three starts or four starts for them? He made four starts this year. He had a couple decent ones, but he didn't eat up any innings, which is going to be the story of Milwaukee's rotation. He's now down in AAA, and it looks like – who did they add? It looks like Jake Petrichka went down with Alex Wilson, and Donnie Hart is going to be brought up. Now, Hart is a reliever, longtime guy with the Orioles. I'm just kind of – curious on what they're going to do with this rotation now that, you know, Burnes is out of it and Peralta's hurt. They did call up one of their younger prospects who got off to a good start in AAA, Aaron Wilkerson, I believe it's pronounced. So I'm guessing he gets a slot, but, you know, I've been kind of the only guy who's been championing that this is going to catch up with the Brewers. Are you buying in here finally that not getting enough innings out of your rotation is going to kill this team?
I think you may be right. They have a terrific offensive club, but pitching is the name of the game. No matter how good your offensive club is, you have to have some pitching to back it up. And right now their pitching looks very suspect to me, so that might do them in through the course of the long season.
Well, you know, looking at it here, you know, all their starters had made four starts. The guy with the most innings after those four starts is Zach Davies, but he's only got 22 2/3 innings. That means he's barely averaging over five innings a start. Woodruff's sitting just over 20 as well. Well, but Chacin, who's supposed to be their ace, is at 19.1. And Peralta and Burnes, who had both made four starts, only put in 17.2 innings. Now, I get they're 23 and they're 24, and you want to kind of watch them, but there's no way a guy is going to develop if he's pitching four-plus innings a start.
No. You got to get him into a six-inning level. At least six innings would be my opinion as to how many innings these guys should pitch. If they're pitching a decent game, you got to let them go six.
Yeah, and you know, luckily they got Jeremy Jeffress back. You know, that was a big plus. But yeah, you know, like it'll look like, my guess is Wilkerson. Well, I called him a young guy. He's actually 30. He'll probably pick a spot up in the rotation. And my guess is, since they keep bringing up relievers, that Chase Anderson will end up back in the rotation. He started the season off in the bullpen because they wanted a long man, which obviously they need because their guys aren't pumping out any innings. But, yeah, or maybe Junior Guerrero goes back into the rotation, even though he's had really good success in the bullpen this season.
It's a shaky situation for them. And my question is, are they going to burn out Josh Hader eventually throughout this course of this season?
Yeah, well, that is possible. I mean, it seems when they use Hader, I'm quite surprised that he seems to pitch more than one inning. I've seen him already this year get a couple two-inning saves. Obviously, he can handle it. His ERA is 0.90 in his seven appearances. But, once your closer goes two innings, obviously he's down for a day or two. You know, you can't use him back-to-back like that. I mean, it's not, the 80s where closers come in and they pitch two innings every day. So,
right.
I don't know. Obviously, getting Jeffress back helps that. But I'm still, it seems like it's going to be too much for this bullpen in the end.
Yeah, that's their Achilles tendon, their weakness, is their pitching, and it'll be interesting to see what happens throughout the course of the season. But brute strength is not always going to get the job done. You got to have pitching.
Yeah.
of the game.
Hopefully they'll get a little help here. The end of the month, Jimmy Nelson is supposed to finally come back. So that'll strengthen the rotation. But again, you're looking at a guy who, didn't pitch all of last year. He's probably going to start off as a five-inning guy at the most when he first gets back. So while it's nice to get a quality starter back, he's still not going to give you big innings.
No, certainly not. And there have been a lot of situations and teams in baseball over the years that have been a very, very poor hitting team, but because their pitching was so strong, they were able to contend quite throughout the season, in some cases winning World Series. I'm thinking of course, when the Dodgers had Koufax and Drysdale, for example. Their hitting was very, very poor, minimal hitting. But with those guys there, it didn't make too much difference.
Well, if you can find a way in, they always say good pitching beats good hitting in the playoffs.
Right. That's right. Exactly right.
So,
pitching and defense.
You just got to kind of see how things work out. I saw the Yankees ended up with another injury. Greg Bird ended up going on the injury list. I still want to say DL, but it's actually the IL now.
Yeah.
I didn't think there was going to be much severity with it, but I saw they went out and signed Logan Morrison to a minor league deal. So I'm wondering if Bird is going to be out longer than maybe people think.
It could very well be, especially since the Yankees made that deal. But, of course, sending him down to the minor means that eventually they're going to call him up, but how effective is he going to be? We'll have to wait and see on that one.
Yeah, the Bird is actually the 12th Yankee on the disabled list. So
they have their share of injuries.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and they're
right
saying
now,
four to six weeks with left plantar fasciitis tear.
Yeah, that might be an optimistic amount of weeks too. 4 to 6 weeks. It could be longer than that. It would not surprise me.
But you're looking at the Yankee lineup like we were talking about it, Mr. Fantasy and I on Sunday. And, the names you're getting, like Gio Urshela is getting regular playing time at third base. Mike Tauschman is getting a lot of time in the outfield. And it's just like, man, where are they finding these guys? Urshela is a – he was a prospect with the Indians for a long time, and it just didn't work out. And I believe Tauschman may have had a short stint with the Cubs.
I don't remember that, but it's possible, of course. A cup of coffee type situation, huh?
or maybe he did, maybe he didn't end up with the Coast, but he actually is from Palatine, so maybe that's what I was thinking.
Right. Because
it looks like he spent some time with the Rockies and with the Rockies before coming over to the Yankees. So maybe that's where I was there. But yeah, it's like I'm seeing these names and they're. You know, these guys aren't really prospects. I mean, Urshela was at one point in time, but, you know, he's 27 now, and he's never had great success hitting major league pitching. You know, Tauschman's 28, and this is his first real bit of regular playing time because of the injuries. You know, I know they called Mike Ford up earlier in the week, and his claim to fame is he once hit 4 home runs in a minor league game. I don't know if that power will translate to the major leagues, but if it does, obviously that's a big plus. But yeah, I just wonder if, you know, the injuries are going to sink this ship on them.
Well, they have so far, and certainly been a very surprising American League Eastern Division so far this year. And besides the Yankees, what about Boston? They have really struggled coming out of the gate. Yeah. I'm not sure if there's any. They have any injuries at Boston, or they're just playing poorly.
Yeah, well, they did today. They did just put Eduardo Nunez on the IL, and I believe Dustin Pedroia is also there. So they're gonna have to do some shuffling at second base until one of those guys get back. But I did hear, and this is something I think Dan and I talked about this yesterday. The Red Sox were saying that in spring training, since they played into October, actually, you know, almost November last year, they changed the way they handled their starting pitchers in spring training. And I'm wondering if possibly that's contributed to the bad start. 'Cause with the exception of David Price, these guys have stunk.
Terrible.
But his velocity was back. He threw 97 in his last start, and that was the complaint, was he didn't have his velocity. So his velocity's back, but he's 0-4 with an 850 ERA.
Yeah, no one would have suspected that because after the great season he had last year.
So, yeah, and I'm just wondering if maybe changing the routine like they did screwed them up.
Yeah, it's possible. It's possible. Also, it's possible that are they considering an injury? Is he hurt? Does he have a minor tweak?
No, I don't think so. He looks okay with his delivery and his rotation and everything. So, that's always been the concern with him has been injuries. But I think he seems all right. I just wonder if, maybe some of these guys are still working their way into, what would be actual game shape.
Yeah, as we always say, though, it's such a long season, and we're just, 10% into the season, so there's a long way to go. And, the old cliche about cream rising to the top, I think of it, when it's all said and done, they'll be competing for the division title, I'm sure, and the Yankees, if they can get around, their injuries will be up there too. Right now, though, Tampa's playing the lights out. They're playing great ball.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest problem is you got to find somebody to beat Tampa Bay. Otherwise, they're going to run away and hide. there won't be any way to catch them if somebody doesn't figure out a way to start beating them.
Yeah. You know what's sad about Tampa? They're off to a great start. They're playing great ball. And I suspect that the attendance is still quite poor.
Oh, yeah. We actually looked at that yesterday. So even though they're playing as well as they are, nobody's going to the games.
Yeah, the same thing, of course, Miami is a bad ball club. So that's why their attendance is so far down. But I'm just wondering if playing in Florida, there's so many other things to do for the people, for the entertainment dollar, that would keep the fans away from going to see Tampa play baseball.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know who is I always thought part of the problem is, you get so many transplanted people – that, you know, they already have a rooting interest. So maybe they go to see, you know, their favorite team when, say, you know, the Yankees or the Cubs or the Sox or the Mets or, you know, wherever you grew up and then relocated to Florida. You know, maybe you go to one game to see that team, but you're not going to see Tampa Bay.
No, that's right. That's right. I'm sure that could be a factor. And that's in the Tampa, St. Pete area, there's a lot of retirees. And I'm not sure how excited they would be about coming to see a baseball game, too.
Right. You know, and then, you know, you can't, you know, you also can't forget the fact that tickets are still, you know, no matter what kind of team you are, tickets are still pretty pricey. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that I'm sure is a factor, too. And especially if you're a retiree, you're not going to be able to afford to go to very many ball games.
Yeah, you know, yeah, unless you're, you know, you happen to be a retired millionaire or something, and you can, you know,
right.
you can kind of go, you know, kind of go whenever you want. So, but yeah, I believe Dan is going to catch a game. I think while he is there, I think the Royals are in town while he is down there, so he's going to grab a. We're going to grab a. You know, he's going to catch a game, so we'll get to see what he thinks of the park and all that other kind of stuff that goes on down there.
Well, as long as it doesn't rain, the weather should be ideal, but it does rain a lot in St. Pete and Tampa area. So dry. Do they have a roof there like they do in Miami or?
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess they'd have to.
Yeah. They won't have to worry about that. The roof is there and they'll be able to play. And you know, one of those, one of those, somebody will play somewhere.
Yeah, no rain out. Well, I hope Dan at least takes his daughter to Busch Gardens. We were talking about that by email. That's a fun place to visit, and she would enjoy that.
Yeah, actually, I still don't know if she went. I never bothered to ask him if he took her with, so we'll have to see if,
No. Maybe he's got a sitter, someone watching her while he's down in Florida. With his wife.
So, you know, we will have to, again, we'll have to see, you know, we'll find this all out when he, you know, comes back in about, what, 9 days or 10 days or whatever he's got going on. So, yeah, but I don't know how much of how much of the NHL playoffs you've been watching. I've been managing to catch a little here and there, obviously the colossal Tampa Bay fail, but we got a couple games tonight. You know, the Bruins have found their way back into the series with the Maple Leafs. It's 2-2, and game five tonight is in Boston. But interestingly, Colorado is up 3-1 on Calgary. Calgary was the number one seed in the West. They're back home for game five. They get bounced tonight?
I wouldn't be surprised. And truth be told, the NHL is a league where you see major upsets like this. You don't see it very often in basketball, in the NBA, but it happens all the time in the NHL. And as you pointed out, look at the example of Tampa with the most points in the league, getting swept, not even winning a playoff game. And oddly enough, they were ahead 3-0 in the first game. You figure, it's going to be an easy series for them, and they wound up losing that game and every other game.
It would be interesting to see, you know, obviously Tampa was number one in the East. It'd be interesting if Calgary goes out because they're number one in the West. You got to start to wonder what kind of fails these teams are going through that they were so good in the regular season and just can't get it together in the playoffs. I mean, Calgary's going to have to win 3 straight to advance.
I
don't know.
And we see that happen in basketball all the time. Teams that are strong fail in the playoffs. But major upsets usually occur in hockey and not in basketball.
Yeah, well, you know, the power teams in basketball, though, don't go out in the first round.
No, that's true.
You know, I mean, we're not going to see a 1 beat an 8. You know, like I know the Clippers beat the Warriors in one game. but you know, we're not going to see them win the series. I mean, you know, I think the Warriors bounced back last night and you know, won that game pretty handily. You know, in the East, Milwaukee has dominated in two games against the Pistons. You know, they won the first one. You know, they've won the first one by 35 and then the second game by 21. So, you know, that just doesn't happen in the NBA like it, you know, like it does in the NHL.
No. If there were an upset in the in the NBA, you usually see it in the second round.
Yeah, you know, it does look like it's possible that, you know, the Spurs have an opportunity to knock off the Nuggets, which would be interesting because obviously it would be a 7 beating a 2. But, you know, like to me, that's not a gigantic surprise. You know, the Spurs are a quality team with probably the best head coach in the NBA while, you know, this is still a little new to the Nuggets. They had a great year, but they don't have a ton of playoff experience. So I wouldn't be hugely shocked to see them, you know, see them end up going out. But, you know, I don't know.
Well, when you see a 2-7 in the West, you know that the 7 team is going to be a fairly decent team anyway.
Yeah. So I've got to see what's the 2-7 in the – well, you know, the 7 seed did win a game in the East, too. Remember, Orlando stole that game 1 in Toronto. Of course, the Magic dominated game 2, or the Raptors dominated game 2. And, you know, game 3 starts here in about 25 minutes, so we'll have to see how that one goes. But
I somehow don't see Orlando winning that series.
No, I wasn't buying it either. It's just one of those odd things. But, hey, you know, at least they managed to steal a game.
Yeah.
So
well, you know, Toronto
has a
history of failing in the playoffs, right? Toronto has a history of failing, but I don't see them losing in the first round to Orlando.
Yeah, I did realize I hate the way the Milwaukee-Detroit series was scheduled because they did the Sunday-Wednesday and now they don't play again until Saturday deal. But I'm wondering if they tried to stretch it out so the Bucks won't have to wait a long time if they sweep.
I know that ABC has a nationally televised game tomorrow night. And you know what that contest is?
Well, believe it or not, they actually have one tonight. If you're watching tonight, you get Boston at Indiana. Here's the here's what they got tonight at 6 p.m. our time. We get Toronto at Orlando. That's the Mickey Mouse game to start with. Then on ABC, you get Boston at Indiana at 7:30. 8:30 tonight, you get Portland at Oklahoma City, and that's back on the Mickey Mouse Network. ABC has a Sunday doubleheader. They don't have a game tomorrow. They got 2 on Sunday. You get Boston at Indiana, and then that's followed by Golden State at the Clippers. So tomorrow it's a TNT night with the Mickey Mouse Network
right,
getting a couple
right.
games.
That's right. It's tonight they have the national game on. On ABC tonight, not tomorrow night, correct?
Yeah, tonight and Sunday. And oddly, Boston and Indiana will be on ABC twice. You know, they get them tonight, and then they're the first game on Sunday.
You know, you think that will be a competitive series, but I don't see Indiana beating Boston in a 7-game series.
No, you know, oddly, if they had Victor Oladipo, I think this could have went another way because they've played a couple close games, but they just don't have that guy, you know, without Oladipo there. So it's kind of difficult for them. You know, they don't have a guy to turn to. I mean, you know, they lost by 10 the first game and 8 the second game. We'll see how it goes tonight. You know, at least they get to go home, so maybe some home cooking
right.
helps them get a game. But,
maybe steal one,
you
but
know,
I don't see them advancing.
No, you know, I think the team that is probably in trouble, and it may not be this series, is Philadelphia. You know, Joel Embiid didn't play last night, and they may be able to get by the Brooklyn Nets without Embiid. But moving into the second round, if he's not healthy and he's got to miss games, they're not going to beat another team.
No, no. So, I don't see him going too far if that injury is a serious one.
You know, and I don't know, you know, what it was or if it was just some kind of – they're saying he has a sore knee. So, you know, as great as a player as he is, he's just had so many injury issues, you just wonder.
Yeah, you know, as we've talked about before, certain players just are injury prone for one reason or another, and it's unfortunate, but it just seems to follow them throughout their career no matter who they're playing for.
Yeah, and now, you know, I was a little surprised by this, and I'm wondering how you take it. Are you surprised that Jimmy Butler doesn't seem to have had a bigger impact on the Sixers? Because, you know, while some player people won't call him a great player, if you don't call him great, he's very good. But he hasn't seemed to have much impact.
No, and I'm wondering why. If the chemistry doesn't seem to be there with him. And he's a great player. He's a terrific player. And he's proven himself in his, what, 4 or 5 years in the league. Or is it longer than that? I don't know. But for some reason, the chemistry doesn't seem to be there. And sometimes that happens. You can be a good player, a great player. But if the chemistry with your fellow teammates isn't there, you're not going to make much of an impact on the team. And that seems to be happening so far.
Yeah, because, well, you know, looking here, you know, in the three-game playoff series so far, he is averaging 19.75 points a game, and he's playing 35.3 minutes. But besides the stats, there hasn't seemed to have been, you know, a real, well, hey, look, you know, there's Jimmy Butler, and he's making an impact on this game. I mean, here in Chicago, he was a fantastic two-way player. And, you know, he could shut guys down and get his own shot. And I don't know if maybe the system doesn't fit him.
That's always a possibility. But when you're the major star of a team like he was in Chicago, it'll be a little different than going to a contending team like Philadelphia. And you got to be part of the package. But so far he's been respectable, but I guess maybe some people expected him to do more than what he's done so far.
Yeah, you know, and obviously, you know, he's still got a couple more games to kind of see what happens with him. And then going forward, you know, they can see how that goes. But, yeah, I thought, you know, he could be somebody who could really maybe turn things his way, you know, Philadelphia's way out there. But it just haven't seemed to happen.
Yeah, well, as you say, there's some more games left, and he could still come up with a monster game and maybe justify the – getting him maybe instead of 19 points, come up with 30, 35 points. Well, he's putting a lot of time in on the court, at least.
So, yeah, because that's what I was wondering, especially with like Embiid out, you know, when he misses games, I thought that would just be a perfect time for Jimmy Butler to take over. I know Ben Simmons handles the ball, but you know, he can't shoot it. So you know, you got to have somebody who can shoot it, and that's where Jimmy comes in.
And I'm sure he's disappointed some of the Philadelphia fans, although, as you pointed out, his stats are reasonable and respectable, but I'm sure they expected more out of Butler. But there's still some more games to play, and past his first round, I would think, without any problems, and we'll see how he does in the next round.
So, yeah, it's definitely, again, you know, something that, you know, we'll have to keep an eye on because, obviously, you know, he's playing for a contract. So
Right. So it behooves him to play his best ball. But he's done okay so far, but not as good as people thought he would do.
So, but yeah, you know, like you said, obviously, you know, like we said, there's, you know, a couple games left. We'll see how he does. So, you know, but yeah, it's I always like to see him do well.
Yeah, but I suspect, by the way, tonight that the ABC rating for the game won't be all that great.
Yeah, no, I may check in for. time to time to see what's going on. But I just still, even though it's the playoffs, I don't enjoy this style of play now. It's just kind of like, okay, well, let's pass the ball around until we find the guy who's got the best 3-point shot and then let him jack it up.
Yeah.
And, you know, in some cases he doesn't even have the best 3-point shot. He's just taking the shot.
I think notoriously the first round ratings aren't all that good. Maybe they hope that as we go deeper into the playoffs, into the later rounds, that the ratings will pick up. There have been exceptions to that rule, of course. Jordan, for example, his heyday was almost cut-like status. So in the first round, there'd be a lot of people watching his games. But same thing with James also, LeBron James.
Yeah, now there's a lot of stars in, you know, the NBA. You don't really, you know, with LeBron out, you don't really have that, you know, one kind of guy. I mean, I know Kevin Durant's getting a lot of attention, but yeah, I'm not sure if, you know, there's one guy to focus on now, is there?
No, there really isn't. And I'm sure the networks aren't very happy about the fact that the Lakers got eliminated from playoff competition.
Oh, no. Yeah. So, yeah, you know that's killing them. So.
Yeah. And when was the last time New York was in the playoffs? They haven't been in for a while either, right?
Oh, God, yeah, it's been quite a few years. So.
Right, and
you know,
you always do better in the ratings if there's a major market team competing, like New York, Chicago, or Los Angeles. But we're not going to see it this year, that's for sure. I'm not even sure we'll see it next year. Maybe the Lakers, possibly. Could make the playoffs next year.
Yeah, depending on, you know, who they add. And I think, you know, if the Knicks do get the number one pick, which wouldn't surprise me, you know, and they land, obviously they would take Zion Williamson, and then they do land a big free agent, like, you know, all the rumors are, you know, they could get into the bottom of the Eastern Conference playoffs, I think, pretty easily.
It's a possibility. And, of course, we're all anointing Williamson as the next superstar in basketball, but we've seen players with the hype not make it. All great,
oh, yeah.
Have a great career in the NBA. You never know. He does look like the real deal, but we'll have to wait and see if he can prove it in the court when he gets to the NBA.
So, yeah, no, it's, you know, there's a long list of guys. I do notice that they all, or a lot of them seem to be centers. You know, the big guys seem to have the trouble. You know, obviously, you know, the most famous one for us here in Chicago is Sam Bowie, just for the fact that Portland took him before Jordan, so the Bulls, lucked into Michael Jordan thanks to Portland.
Yeah,
we're
still thanking them to this day, right?
Yeah, you know, and I mean, you know, the other guy, Portland again, you know, they took Greg Oden number one and Kevin Durant went number two. So, you know, they've definitely had some issues there in Portland, some bad luck. But, yeah, you just kind of wonder.
Yeah, it's a roll of the dice, and I think the top three players in the draft this year are quite strong. I think there may be a fairly large drop-off at number four.
Probably the Bulls are going to be sitting, right? So.
Well, look at the percentages. Aren't that far. The Bulls aren't that far behind percentage-wise. I think the top three have a 14% shot of getting the number one, and the Bulls have a 12.5 shot. So that's not that much of a difference, although we know it's going to go to New York anyway.
Yeah. So, well, you know, and then the biggest problem is the fact that even if the Bulls get it, will they take the right guy? So.
Well, I'm sure that they'll select the best player available. Isn't that the cliche they always use, all the teams use?
Yeah. you know, that's what they say. I mean, we'll have to, you know, we'll have to see how that goes. But yeah, I don't have a, I don't have a ton of confidence that even if they were to move up, because it looks like the top three in some order will be Williamson and then Ja Morant and R.J. Barrett. I still don't know if, you know, that they would make the right pick, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think that those three are pretty competitive and great players. I think Barrett looks like he's going to be good. Maybe the Bulls will wind up getting Barrett. Would you be satisfied with that?
Yeah, you know, I think if they get in the top three, as long as they, again, make the right selection, which you always have to worry about with Paxson and Foreman making these picks, you know, I mean, you know, obviously Lauri Markkanen looks okay, but their other picks haven't exactly been, you know, been that great. So
yeah, they did okay with Markkanen, but some of their other selections over the past few years have not been all that great.
And again, I wanted to look here to see who some of the other names are, if I know any of these guys. But yeah, it looks like four is the kid who just declared from Texas Tech, Jarrett Culver. You know, I saw him play a little bit in the tournament, but I don't know about much about him. So, you know, maybe, you know, like his comparisons are to Kendall Gill, and they say he's almost Paul Pierce. I don't know if I want Kendall Gill at number four.
Yeah, is that the greatest selection for number four? I have my doubts. But, well,
yeah.
Of course, he had a chance to showcase himself in a championship game. And if I don't remember what his stats were, but I'm sure he'll go in the top four or five for sure.
So, yeah, you know, we'll just have to kind of see, you know, how they – you know, how they end up going. But, yeah, past the top three, there aren't a ton of names that I, you know, have seen a lot of. I mean, five, they have a big guy, 7'3", Jason Hayes. Six, they have Coby White. Seven is DeAndre Hunter. Eight is Darius Garland. Nine is Nasir Little. And the top 10 rounds out with Nickeil Alexander-Walker. I don't know diddly about any of those guys. So
No. But I'm sure that there are some skilled players in that group.
Yeah, I just don't know if there's the elite player the Bulls need. You know, and that's what they need. They need a top guy that they can – because, like, you know, while Markkanen seems to be a good player, I don't think he's the guy on your team who's your best player. I think you need somebody else. So,
yeah, they have some players on the team that are talented, and they can get over some of the injuries, and some of them happen to some of them, and maybe play cohesively for a change and not and go through the beginning of the season without anybody getting hurt. I think they might be better than they were this season. Of course, I'll – assuming that they got a good pick in the draft.
Yeah, and, you know, again, that's a big assumption with the front office we got working here. So who was their number one pick last year?
I'm trying to remember.
I actually remembered. It popped into my head. It was Wendell Carter Jr.
That's right. The Duke player, right? He played for Duke, didn't he?
No, I think he played for Kentucky.
Oh, okay. But
no.
He
one of those
potential.
Schools where you want him done.
He was probably below average until he got hurt.
But, you know, that's expected. So.
And then, of course, then he gets hurt. And
yeah.
Hope he comes back healthy next season. I think he could be an influence on the team. I think he could help them.
All right, well, enough of that garbage. We will get into Stu's game. Now, you know, the weather got a little bit of the best of you there last week with your Cub prediction, so you ended up 1-3. So we will try it again here. You get the advantage, of course, of knowing that they did win today against the Diamondbacks. They have two more games. The matchup tomorrow is Yu Darvish against Zach Greinke, and then the series wraps up with Jose Quintana against Robbie Ray. So just like last week, do the Cubs win the series is the first question.
I say yes. And by the way, Quintana will not be pitching Sunday. They made a change, I believe. I believe Chatwood will be pitching Sunday now instead.
Oh, so they better win tomorrow than win in the series.
Right.
All right. And then the second question, of course.
I'm glad you mentioned that because I think tomorrow is a very important game for Darvish. If he can pitch in seven strong innings against with the home fans behind him and pitch a decent game and beat Greinke, that would be a lot. That would really be important to me.
Yes, and then, you know, the second question that goes along with your picks is, do the Cubs sweep?
No.
All right, and then we move into the next series, which is Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. They have the Dodgers coming in. They have it listed here as Cole Hamels against Kenta Maeda, Kyle Hendricks against Walker Buehler, and then Darvish again against Ross Stripling. So the same thing, do the Cubs win the series?
I will say they win 2 out of 3. I believe that Quintana will probably pitch the first game of the series.
Yeah.
My guess would be
they're making a change. That would probably make sense. It would probably be Quintana, Hamels, and then Hendricks in that order. But, you know, I'm just going off of what they have listed here on the schedule. So, and obviously, if you haven't taken 2 out of 3, they're not going to sweep. So there you go. We got Stu's picks locked in, and we will double check next Friday to see how he goes. And looking ahead next week, you'll have another matchup against Arizona and then a short 2-game set with the Mariners that you'll have to pick next week.
Yeah. It's only 2 games against Seattle, right?
Yeah. Yep, just a quick 2-game trip to Seattle before they come home to face the Cardinals in a big weekend series.
That'll be exciting. And, of course, going to Arizona next week, and it'll be one good thing in their favor, they'll have decent weather.
Yes, so that will definitely. Well, hopefully, you know, we don't want to jinx anything. So
no, but boy, the conditions today were really incredibly tough.
Yeah,
especially for the outfielders.
Yeah, that was definitely a rough day out there. And I did see we already had a couple postponements. Minnesota at Baltimore and Atlanta at Cleveland have already been called off for the day. So if you're playing fantasy or something, you know, get in there and get your lineups changed.
Time to switch. Were you impressed with Hendricks' performance today, by the way? He looked to me.
Yeah, you know, I
that was the best.
Well,
he looked very
well.
Good today. Yeah,
you know, I mean, he
strong game.
looked a little more like the Kyle Hendricks you expect, right?
Yeah, he had a little trouble in the first inning, I think. I think they may have been squeezing the plate in him a little bit, but boy, after that he looked like his old form, his old good form at least. And the thing is, I want to see some consistency. I want to see him do it again next time.
A lot of the big number for him though, right?
Right, it's true.
So you know what I mean? You know, it's nice to see a couple of the bullpen guys do okay, except Brock was a nightmare out there, but you know, at least Stroke got to come in and get a save.
Yeah, well, Brock did get one strikeout.
Yeah.
Actually, the first ball that Rizzo, that infield hit, could have been made by Rizzo, I think. But it was a funny kind of a tricky hop.
Yeah.
But that rope with two men on base did not look very good.
Yeah, that was still a tough play. You know, I thought Rizzo was going to make it because he normally does, but just a tough play for him.
Right. I thought that Elmora had maybe an outside chance of making one of his great patented catches deep in the outfield, but that ball was hit so hard that he, and with the wind conditions, he had no chance to make the play.
Yeah. All right. We're going to get out of here now. Mr. Fantasy is going to be back at 10 a.m. on Sunday morning for a couple of hours if you're in Florida. You know the deal. SportsCentRadio.com. Look for that new blog tomorrow morning. Look over to the Facebook page from there. Click down a like. But don't forget the Twitter feed, which is at SportsCentRadio. Feel free to look me up on Twitter. I am at SportsCentRadio. As always, coming on and listening to you. Remember, the podcast is available for you to listen to anytime you want at